It's the first parak of the Shmona Prakim. And in this opening chapter, the Rambam turned our attention to beginning with anatomy. Beginning with our psychological anatomy, our spiritual anatomy. Beginning with a look at the different parts of our nefesh, the different parts of our soul. We saw the Rambam said in the opening, there aren't multiple souls. There aren't even multiple parts in the physical sense. He's not thinking neurologically the different parts of the brain. He's thinking about different powers or different capabilities that we have within, different aspects of the different functions of what it means to be alive. The Rambam had identified five, sort of a ladder, a hierarchy, from lowest to highest, or from most primitive to most uniquely human. The last time we had focused on the first three, and now we're going to turn our attention to the last two. The first one was the Chelek HaZan. That was the life force on the most basic level, the ability to digest and to grow and to reproduce and so on and so forth. So that degree of living of life that we share with animals and plants. And then came the Chelek HaMargish, number two, was sensory input, sight and smell and taste and hearing and touch. And then, building on the basic life functions, and then on sensory input, was Chelek HaMizdama, then the Chelek HaMizorer, and finally the Chelek HaSichli. The Chelek HaMizdama was the last that we really dealt with last time. Literally, Chelek HaMizdama is an imaginative faculty, the power of imagination. The Rambam had a very intriguing way sort of put memory and imagination together. He said, level two is sensory input. Sensory input is in the moment. I see something, I hear something, I smell something. So there's my Chelek HaMargish. But the fact that I can remember it later, the fact that I can process it later, the fact that I can do something with it later, so that's whether it's remembering it accurately, remembering what I've seen or heard accurately, or whether it's the power of imagination to sort of take the bits and pieces of things that I've come across and recombine them in all sorts of outlandish ways, whether it's to remember things accurately, whether it's, as he said, to imagine a metal boat flying in the air, which at the time was absurd. Either way, memory and imagination come together in this third chelek, chelek hamadama. And now we come to the last two. The Chelek HaMisorer and the Chelek HaSichli. And let's see, we're going to see that they are, in a word, emotion and intellect. Let's take a look at the language of the Rambam, and let's see how they play themselves out. Chelek HaMisorer, here we are, if you're following along in this edition, it's the Rav Shalat's edition, it's page Reish Lamed, 230. Chelek HaMisorer. Literally sounds like the arousal aspect of the soul, of the mind. The element number four is that which will give you desire. I'm interested in something. I desire something. Oh, you must say it. Or maybe you're revolted by something. This part of the soul, this part of the mind can cause me to pursue something or to flee something. Choose something or stay away from something. Hakas or hasratzos. Anger or satisfaction. Pachad va'oz. Fear or strength and courage and boldness. Achzarias rachmanos. Cruelty or compassion. Ava v'sinna. Love or hate. Harbe me'ela mikra nafshim. And many such phenomena of the soul. Now, this sounds a lot like an array of different mitos. It sounds like an array of different aspects of personality. But the way he began, looking at desire or the opposite, this sounds like we're really talking about emotion. And then he talks about how does this part of the mind or soul play itself out? Kalei elu hakochos, the tools, the vehicles of these powers are called Varyagov. all my physical limbs. Like the hand's ability to hold something. The foot's ability to walk somewhere. The eye's ability to look at something in particular. The power of the heart, as he puts it, over strength or fear. Courage or fear. Or the obvious limbs and the hidden limbs, or like the heart, they are all vehicles, all tools for this ability, for this aspect, this fourth aspect of one's inner life, and that is desire. Desire, making decisions from a place of emotion. And then finally, there's number five, Echelek HaSechli. Echelek HaSechli. Let's see, what does he say about rational thought. You know, the Rambam thought a lot and gave an incredible amount of value to rational thought. It's at the top of this ladder, this hierarchy of five aspects. Chelek ha-sichli, the mental or the cognitive, the cerebral aspect, ha-koch ha-nimtza la-adam, that's the power that man has, that humans have. Which Rosh Halak points out, in other words, on the one extreme was level one, basic life functions, that's shared by by plants and animals. The middle three were, you know, the ability to take in sensory data, to process sensory data, and the ability to remember and then to imagine, and feelings and drives, the drives of the Chelek HaMisover, those are all things that human beings have and share with, you know, many other animals. Chelek ha-sichli is ha-koch ha-nimtza la-adam. That's something that humans have. That's going to be the most distinguished, humanly distinct aspect. And I think nowadays often psychologists think about this even in anatomical terms, literally anatomical terms, in terms of different parts of the brain, the most primitive and then more advanced. Chelek ha-sichli is that which makes us uniquely human. Asher bo yaskil. Gives us the ability to think. Uvotiya his bonus. Gives us the ability to ponder something. His bonus might mean, certainly in the Ramchalian sense, of self-reflection and of consciousness of self. Uvo yikne ha-chachmos. It's through the chelek ha-sichli, through my cerebral part, that I can learn things. Uvo yavchim ben ha-maguna. Not to learn things, but learn wisdom, to learn chachmos. I can learn things with sensory input also, but to learn ideas, it's a chelek ha-sichli. And that's also what's going to give me not only knowledge, but moral sense. To be able to distinguish between actions which are proper and actions which are despicable. The Eluhav, so that's an important set of ideas. To learn, to self-reflect, to learn abstract knowledge, and moral sense. The Eloha Pu'ulos, when we talk about to be able to differentiate between different types of actions, Chelek Mehem Masi, Chelek Yuni. It could be sometimes practical, it could be sometimes abstract. A Masi could be Malachti or Machshavti. So practical things, whether it's sort of technological, or not, and Shayla is playing with the terminology of Melechas Machshavas here, Melachti and Machshavti. Maybe he probably means sort of technical versus strategic. And he talks about Masi, things which are practical, so it could be Melachti, actually in terms of like technique of how to do things. And Melechas Machshavas, the Machshavti would be sort of like the strategic element of sort of planning what it is I'm doing and seeing it through. And vision in terms of what I'm trying to accomplish. And then iuni, to learn more abstract knowledge. That's called chachmos. Whereas malachti, that's hakar shabonu min hamalachos, to learn sort of practical, technological skills, nagarut, to learn carpentry, to learn farming, to learn medicine, to learn boatsmanship, sapanut. Machshavti shebo yizbonen b'davar sheyirtzo la'asoso, beis sheyirtzo la'asoso. To consider the thing that I want to do and figure out how I'm going to go about doing it. I'm efshar la'asoso imlo. Can I? Is this an attainable goal? V'im efshar eich tzarach shi'asa. And if I think it's doable, how can I go? But sort of like strategic piece. And again, that does connect in a very in a very real way to the notion of malachas machshavas. That's a lot of what malachas machshavas has to do with in Hilchos Shabbos. Talk about malachat tzrich legufa. That's deliberate work. I have a goal. I'm figuring out how I'm implementing around that goal. And that's in a Hilchos Shabbos sense a big part of malachas machshavas. And when he's talking about the power of thought, sort of intellectual powers. It's interesting, sort of the collection, just like when we looked at Chelek Gimel, the Chelek HaMedama, it's interesting to see him put together memory and imagination. It's interesting to see him sort of gather beneath this overall rubric of the intellect to look at moral sense, and then to look at sort of practical ability as a skill, like almost like dexterity, and then to look at sort of strategic thinking, and then to look at abstract learning. Yeah. These are all aspects of the human soul.
Okay, so how do we refer to the third?
He calls it the chelek hamedame, literally the sort of the imaginative power. Right. Right. Yes, so that's interesting. And I think in general, sort of the last three are in a sense a trio. As imaginative faculty, whether it's sort of conjuring up accurate, sensory data, what did I see, what did I hear, or putting things together in a creative, imaginative way. And then you have drive, you have imagination, and you have drive, and you have mind, what we would call mind. This fifth chelek ha-sichli, and that sort of includes moral thinking, and includes abstract thinking, includes practical thinking, and strategic thinking, and a vision, implementation. You have those three higher faculties, imagination, drive, and mind. In addition to sort of the two more basic ones, which are basic life functions and sensory input, the imaginative and the drive and the mind. And that completes the set of five. That, as Rambam says, interesting language, and language that we're going to see over and over, specifically over the course of Shmona Prakim, I think more than in most other Sfarim. He's very deliberate, sounds like a little bit like an Israeli general. So, and now I said everything I have to say. Ze shi'ur mashiro ula shi'izachem me'inyan nefesh ha'inav. I think I've said enough on this topic. I still remember distinctly. I was at a naval induction in Haifa. Shlomi Gutman completed his naval officer's course. And a couple of us went to the naval base in Haifa. It was beautiful. It was incredibly inspiring. The first group of Bnei Yeshiva to finish the naval officer's course. And the admiral came to speak, and he was very moved. And at the same time, he said he spoke very, very beautifully. And then when he was done, he said, "Zo." He was done. No need for any fancy oratorical flourishes. He said everything he wanted to say. "Zo." The Rambam does it here. And this is not the only parak in which he does it. He talks for a while, and then he says, okay, I've said enough of what I plan to say about this topic. So the parak's over. Boom. I've said enough about the nefesh. He goes on to give a little platonic postscript, that last paragraph. He talks about actually developing one's mind, takes it from potential to actual. We all have this incredible amount of human potential in the way in which we're created, but will it be a seichel b'pol or not, where I actually actualize all of this mental capability, where I just be carrying a lot of potentials unused, where it actually be put to use, He says there's more to say about that, but that's not really our topic here. Maybe I'll talk about it when I work on my, Rambam writes, in my work about Nevuah, he had planned. It's clear when there's several different locations in the Perush HaMishnah. Rambam talks about the Sefer about Nevuah that he was planning to write. You usually assume that ultimately became a chunk of the larger Mor Nevuchim, the material he was originally planning to present as a Sefer Nevuah became sort of big chunks of the Mor Nevuchim. So be that as it may, he says, that's a topic we'll take up some other time. Here we're really, it sounds like here, in Shemona Prakim is really meant to be introduction to Pirkei Avos, really meant to be introduction to Torah Hamidos. So that's really his focus. And if you think about that, there was a lot of Midos work in what was coming up here. Right? When he spoke about the fourth aspect, the Chelek HaMisor, the drive, there was a lot of focus on the way in which drive leads to different personality applications. It may yield courage, or it may yield fear, it may yield compassion, or it may yield cruelty. And there's definitely a focus on, an emphasis, understandably, on the Midos applications of what we're learning, because that's where he's, in this introduction, is meant to be not just abstract ideas, but setting us up for an effective learning of Pirkei Avos and of the Tikkun HaMidos that Pirkei Avos is going to offer us. And the Chelek HaSichli also, as he spoke about, right up front, he's talking about that part of the power of the mind is the ability to make moral distinctions and moral discriminations in the positive sense of discrimination, to be able to differentiate, identify, is this a correct way to act or is this an incorrect way to act. But as we're thinking about this sort of this set of five, right, the basic life functions and sensory data, and then sort of these higher three, imaginative, drive, and mind. So if Shaylock points out, there's something missing. Although Jake already noted that maybe it is sort of lurking here. Is what's missing, you would expect if we're doing an anatomy of the mind and soul, that we came across emotion, we came across intellect, and we came across imagination. And where's will? Where's Ratzon? Shouldn't the will be a sort of a... It seems like it's absent. Shouldn't that be aspect five, aspect six? Isn't that so critical? So the way he develops it, he says will isn't here as an independent aspect, but will is present in both aspect four and aspect five. Both in drive and in mind, he talks about in aspect four, choosing to embrace something or to move away from something, to draw near or to flee. There's will there, and there's also will in Chelek HaSichli, as we're talking about, having the ability to decide is this the right thing to do, or the wrong thing to do. The language that Shaila used, interesting language, instinctive will and autonomous will. Am I making decisions out of just from instinct, or shooting from the hip? Either way, I'm making decisions. We all make lots of decisions, thousands of decisions every day, maybe tens of thousands. The question is, where are those decisions coming from? Is it coming from part four or part five? Are just sort of making them from instinct, just sort of primitive drive? Is what I want, or am I making, or is my will being driven, my decision making being driven by my mind? So he refers to as instinctive will or autonomous will. It's sort of from instinct, or I'm actually in a free human being. Actually, I own my life. My drives don't own me. I own my life, my identity, my thought, is owning who I am and is owning my. My decisions. Rav Shailat points us to a line in the Mishnah Torah, and then I want to share with you also a line that I saw attributed to Rav Moshe Shapiro. Rav Shailat points us to in Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph, talks about in talking about Nevuah, which is again a topic that he mentioned here already. Nevuah for the Rambam really represents the the zenith, or like the peak of human perfection. If a person really is going to perfect himself, the mountain that you're scaling, the summit of this mountain that you're trying to scale at the top is nevuah. Or at least you're becoming the sort of person who's eligible for nevuah. Whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides to grant or not, that's going to be a divine decision. But that represents, we're thinking like in the Ramchal terms, there's this ladder, you know, going higher and higher and higher in terms of human self-improvement, human perfection. For the Rambam certainly, as for the Ramchal as well, at the top of the ladder is nevuah, or certainly eligibility to be a Navi. So Rambam in the beginning of Perek Zayin, beginning of the seventh Perek of Yesod HaTorah, he talks about nevuah, talks about eligibility, sort of a person who's eligible for nevuah, talks about who misgaber bedato al yitzro, that he practices self-control, self-power, lehisgaber, to be in charge of oneself, bedato al yitzro, with his das, he's misgaber over his yetzer, which Rav Shalak points out, that sounds like, you know, elements 5 and 4. Das is element 5. Das is the mind, the chelak ha-sechli, and yetzer, drive, that's drive, that's chelak ha-mizora. And the question is, who's in charge? Is element 5 in charge of element 4, or is element 4 in charge of element 5? And says that the ideal situation, this could be a lifetime of work to grow into being this way consistently, but what we aspire to do, and certainly on a case-by-case basis, you can succeed in the moment, of miskaber bedato al yitzro, that my das is in charge of my yitzro. Not just to clarify, again, this is a Jewish perspective. We're not looking, chalila, to destroy the yitzro, and we're not looking to destroy the drive, but it's a question of, is it serving at the pleasure of the seichel? Is a yitzro working for the seichel, or is the seichel working for the yetzer? Who's in charge? The key elements. The yetzer has an important role to play if it's being driven by the seichel. Misgaber b'dato al yitzro. Yisod HaTorah, Perek Zayin, Halacha Aleph. I came across, there's a sefer, Re'ei Emunah, came out a couple of years ago. It's a collection of Re'ei's, Reish Ayin Hei, to shepherd faith, which is itself is such a rich term. It's the title for a series of, I think, probably 40, 50 shiurim or so that Meir Shapiro gave in the late 60s on working his way through with a group, working his way through step by step, thoroughly through the 13 Imamot. Very, very fascinating, beautiful shiurim. There's a lot of history in those shiurim also. Those were really, in many ways, the beginning of the organized Tshuva movement there to Israel. This is after 1967. And there was a significant group of intellectuals, Jewish intellectuals, who had been raised without the benefit of a religious education and were very inspired by 67 and wanted to engage the ideas of Yadus in a very substantive way. And Meir Shapiro, they were the right man at the right time. And he had this group that he studied with, I think, for like a year and a half, maybe 2.5 years. And slowly, week by week, they worked their way step by step through all the 13 Mountains. And then in the last couple of years, someone collected that material and put it together into a sefer. It's a very, 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 very attractive sefer. In the introduction, Shapiro talks about a topic that you usually hear in Kabbalistic literature, and he explains it in plain language. The concept is Naran, Nun Resh Nun, which stands for Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. Those are the three most common terms you'll find in biblical Hebrew for human soul or spirits. So the Nefesh is the soul, sort of hard to translate. Ruach literally is spirit or wind. And then neshama, which literally is breath. The Torah describes metaphorically the process of HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowing us with the neshama, the yipach ba'ap of nishmas chayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, blew into Adam's nose the neshama. the neshama of life. So that literally neshama is related to the word neshima. So what do these three things mean? Nefesh, ruach, neshama. You'll see references to naran. What does that mean? So Shapiro explains, and it shows a basis for this. Nefesh is drive, and neshama is thought. Neshama is the mind, or using the now that we've been learning the Rambam's Perek Aleph here, the nefesh is aspect 4, and neshama is aspect 5. Nefesh is, we talk about nefesh ha-bahamas, the animal soul. That's the nefesh. So that aspect of us that we share with the rest of the animal kingdom. Right? Yeah. Drive. Chel comes over. And neshama
the
is...
says that we don't share them, and our drives are different.
Are different, absolutely. But we do have those things in parallel. So human drives are distinct from animal drives, but we have things that parallel... We have things that parallel that which animals have. But I think aspect number 5 is not the same at all. And then he says, Ruach, Rav Shapiro suggests, is will. And the question of Naran is how is the hierarchy set up, right, in my life? Is it nefesh, ruach, neshama, or is it neshama, ruach, nefesh? The will answers to whom? There's executive functioning, actually getting stuff done. Stuff happening in my life. So is ruach answering to the nefesh, and then the neshama, the ruach is driving the neshama under the instructions of the nefesh? In other words, are my drives in charge? And my mind is my will is driving, is working my neshama, my mind, at the behest of my drives? And are my drives in charge? Or no, it's the other way around. The healthier way, the proper way, which is neshama is in charge. The neshama is driving the ruach, which in turn is driving the nefesh. My mind, rational thought, and as you pointed out, as Rama, we just saw in the Rama, that includes moral discernment, is in charge. And I'm actually making thoughtful decisions. And I'm thinking about what my values are. The way that Ramchal describes in the third chapter of Maseilas Yesharim, I'm making decisions from a place of what's really important, and how do those values, abstract values, play on the situation, and then the nefesh is implementing what the neshama wants, mediated through the ruach, mediated through the will. So I think that that picture that Rav Shapira paints of sort of the will in between. And the question is the will answering to the nefesh, the will answering to the neshama, the ruach answering to the nefesh, ruach answering to the neshama, is the will answering to drives or to mind and thought and values? So that's that fundamental question. I think with the Gemara that we've come across in other contexts, Gemara that the Baal Tanya gives a lot of focus to, the way the Gemara defines Tzaddik and Rasha, well, the Gemara describes Tzaddik and Rasha, the Tzaddik Yetzer Tov Shofta, and Rasha Yetzer Hara Shofta. Literally, it sounds like the Tzaddik, the Yetzer Tov will judge him, and the Rasha, the Yetzer Hara, will judge him, which it sounds as though it's a sort of cause and effect. If you're a tzaddik, then you get to be judged by your Yetzer Tov. If you're a Rasha, then you got to suffer with being judged by Yetzer Hara. So that's sort of like the outcome. Since you're a tzaddik, here's how you'll be judged. And
but that's will, that's not free will. Because there's that determination of tzaddik.
Good, right. So that's what the Baal Tanya and others, I think, also talk about that as it's a mistranslation. It's not who judges you post facto. Now that you've acted, who judges you? So my Yetzer Tov isn't a judger. It isn't a judger in the sense of right. Here we mean a sense of my sense of judgment. How am I making decisions? It's not that if you're a tzaddik, then you will be judged by your tzaddik, but if you're Russia, then you'll have to suffer being judged by your tzaddik. No, the tzaddik is one whose judgment is driven by the Yetzer Tov. My chelak hasichli is in the driver's seat. That's how my heuristic, my decision making is rooted, and it's the reins are in the hands of the seichel. Whereas Russia is one for whom the reins are in the hands of drives of the Yetzer Hara. And that's where that's the fundamental question. Yeah.
Okay. I have to ask now because you mentioned the term guitar.
Sure.
Where did the Rambam? There is a concept of guitar, or exactly whatever. Exactly. You know, probably a different definition. Where did the Rambam think that is? Is it in multiple places?
I would suggest that, and that's what part I was trying to. I'm glad you raised that. That's what I was trying to draw with putting the Rambam's fourth and fifth aspects in parallel with the nefesh and neshama in the way of Shapira explains them, and in parallel with Yetzer Tov Shofto Yetzer Hara Shofto in the way that Tanya understands that Gemara. I think that's what we're looking at. In other words, sort of instinctive draw. Yetzer is not necessarily a bad thing, but if it's just instinctive, it's chel kamis orer, and that's what's in charge, then that's Yetzer Hara. Whereas if it's being mediated and
but he says that
through thought and moral discernment, that's Yetzer Tov.
But he says that both cowardice and bravery are in the chel kamis orer, and so is cruelty and mercy. And so one of those, you know, love and hate, one of those is a good thing, one of those is bad. They're both in there.
Well,
and then he says that differentiating between proper and improper actions or good and bad actions is in the chelak asifli. So does that mean that...
All right, so that, I think, goes back to Rav Shalat's formulation. The aspect four, the chelak hamazor, that's instinctive living. I feel like it's emotion. I feel like being brave. I feel like being cowardly. As opposed to... Let me think. Like, what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu want me to do in this situation? What's the right thing to do? Should I do brave things or should I do cowardly things? Sometimes it makes sense. Sometimes the right thing to do is to run away. Sometimes the right thing to do is to stay and fight. But to make those decisions from a place of thought and moral discernment, as opposed to just going with whatever I feel, and sort of instinctively, emotionally. If I just make a decision, emotion is a very important role to play, but it shouldn't be driving my decisions. If I'm just making decisions from a place of untutored emotion, just making decisions from a place of, here's how I feel, then that's chelak hamazor.
So this is a different definition than I think maybe the Ramchal will say, it's your animal, it's you wanting to have the physicality is your yetzer hara. You want to have food, and you want to have wine, and whatever other things that people want. And here, it seems different. In other words, that doesn't necessarily include. I'm not sure. I mean, there's a yetzer hara. Let's say that I would say, you know, I mean, I don't know. Let's say I would say, well, I know that you know, the rabbi of the shul said it was permissible to do this, but that's for other people, not for me. I'm saying if I would say this.
Right.
So that's the yetzer hara talking. That's ridiculous. There's no, whatever the rabbi says is more.
Hates her because it's arrogant. You think because it's arrogance?
Yeah, but that's so.
But she's definitely including as
in part four.
I think so, and I think that Ramchal would also. In other words, Ramchal speaks plenty in our Mesilas Sharmuk, but we haven't gotten to Perek Yud Aleph. And in Perek Yud Aleph, he has a lot to say about sort of physical averos that people struggle with, as well as midos that people struggle with. Ramchal definitely agrees. The midos rose are part of the yetzer hara. That's also part of my physical makeup or my psychic makeup.
I know
Seth has been thinking for a while about differences between. So I've seen differences between the Rambam and the Ramchal, and I think especially particularly along these lines of the. The Ramchal definitely uses terminology in the earlier Prashkam, the gasus achomrius, sort of the coarseness of physicality is what gets in the way of our clarity, which I think, I know you don't always, Seth, you don't always like when I ascribe it to more semantics than anything else, and it might be wrong, But in other words, the Rambam is definitely talking about, if not the same in different terminology, it's trying to similar ideas. When he's talking about, I could be doing the same things, but am I just acting out of instinct, just drive, or am I actually thinking things through? I'm discerning what's right and what's wrong, opposed to just blah, like here's what I want to do, here's what I feel like doing.
It's really a mode of conduct that's been shaping the course of action. So, for example, surely if a person saw an elderly individual needed help and he instinctively went over and helped the person, that isn't acting out of emotion, that's acting out over a course of conduct where it's the right thing to do, and he's let his intellect make that decision. So, in a sense, it's a muscle.
Right. Habit is not necessarily shallow.
I think the use of sharp terms, again, tends to blur things.
Right.
He's talking about the reason you rationally went to help an elderly person because you're doing the right thing. That's beyond emotion. That's emotion applied at an intellectual level to create a course
right.
of conduct. I don't think it's action by action. I think it's over the course of time. What motivated you?
Right. Yeah, motive, I think, is a good word to think about. Is it instinctive, emotional motive, or is it a thoughtful motive? And I want to correct one thing also that you inspired me to say, which is I take back what I said before. I think I was saying before, sort of like, the aspect for drive is necessarily Yetzara, and that's certainly overstepping, because he's definitely not presenting drive as always bad. It could be take me to good places or bad places. But to act, but again, it... And drive is incredibly important in a healthy, appropriate living. But again, coming back to Rav Shalach's point that where does will lie? If my will is lodged in drive, as if I'm making decisions out of, if drive and feeling is what's making my decisions, that's a problem. They may not always be bad decisions, but in the long run, they're going to be shallow and ultimately net. Bad decisions, as opposed to the ideal where Yetzer Tov Shofto, where it's a Chelek HaSichu, it's my mind, my moral thought, which is decision making, and is using. I'm putting my drives at the service of my thought, and that's to bring it back home. We're about to daven. To bring it back home, the hidden in Muchan Mezuman, the Kavana that is printed in the Siddur to say before Tefillin, that's rooted largely in the Kuzri and Rebbe Yonah on the tour. It talks there a lot about the Shalyad, the Shalrosh, as being the sort of the drives and the talents, and that has a lot to do. I think it in many ways parallels the Chelek HaMisor, the Chelek HaSichli, and the goal of Tefillin is to put them both in the service of Kadosh Baruch Hu, to put my drives and my talents, mental and otherwise, the service of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what we're going to do right now when we daven Ma'ariv. Yashkoach.